Today on Off Mic, COVID-19 cases continue to rise in Northwest Indiana and the rest of the state. We take a look at the latest numbers, but there may be help on the way. Pfizer's new vaccine could be making its way to Indiana hospitals soon. And you're probably spending a lot of time at home. That means doing a lot of movie watching. So what are the best streaming services? We'll talk to one expert. And while it's football season, the White Sox are getting all the press. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said on ABC's Good Morning America this morning that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration will grant emergency use authorization to the COVID-19 vaccine developed by Pfizer and German partner BioNTech. He says we could see people getting the vaccine by Monday or Tuesday of next week. That's what Azar said on Good Morning America. The news comes a day after an independent committee voted in an eight-hour public hearing Thursday to recommend authorization. Mass vaccinations could begin days ahead for hundreds of thousands of frontline healthcare workers and nursing home residents, a potential turning point in the country's bitter battle against the virus. The vaccine authorization process is taking place as the U.S. death toll from the novel coronavirus moves closer to 300,000 people. Here in Indiana, the numbers also continue to rise. Just today, 7,360 new COVID-19 cases. This is what Governor Eric Holcomb had to say about the tense situation.
But we have more counties in red for positivity levels this week than we did last week. Our seven-day positivity rate, the number of hospitalized COVID patients has risen to over 3,200 people. That's statewide, obviously. Daily admissions are 400, north of 400. Our nurses and our doctors, understandably, assistants are overwhelmed and beyond exhausted. I mean, they are trying to recharge their batteries maybe one day a week to go into one of the toughest environments that anyone in our state's history has had to face on a day-in, day-out basis or endure, all on behalf of trying to make other people better.
So, of course, this has been just a recurring storyline that's been going on since March. And joining me to talk about this and some of the latest news is Lakeshore Public Radio's Tom Maloney. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Mike, good morning. Great to be in studio with you.
Absolutely. So, you know, there are a lot of news today about the vaccine and when people can start getting vaccinated. And that also includes Northwest Indiana, because we do know that Indiana at least petitioned to get as many as 55,000 doses of the vaccine. And some of those are going to come to Northwest Indiana at Community Hospital. Community Hospital is the designated hospital to house the Pfizer vaccine. I think it has to be in negative 90 degrees to store it. But they are the designated hospital in this area to get the vaccine. So while we are almost, 9-10 months into this continuing situation with the pandemic, maybe this is the light at the end of the tunnel?
It feels that way, but I think for most of us who are not frontline workers who are listening right now, you know, we're looking at 6 to 9, maybe 10 months away still. We're looking at the summer, and of course, it's the double shot version that's being supported by the FDA, Pfizer's double shot. So you go in for the first shot, then a few weeks later, you have to go back for that second shot to make that first shot work and to build up that immunity from the coronavirus. And, it does feel like light at the end of the tunnel, but it's still a long way away. More realistically, I think the way things are kind of shaping up right now, that light at the end of the tunnel is probably the train barreling down on us Like you said, Mike, and like the governor announced earlier this week, our numbers are going through the roof when it comes to COVID cases in the state, especially following the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, the long weekend just a few weeks ago. And of course, we're now right around the corner from Christmas and New Year's, and it could be an ugly January.
And that's right. We are 2 weeks since the Thanksgiving holiday, where a number of people did stay home. But I do realize that a lot of families did still got together. And while travel was down for the airlines, you know, more than a million people still flown. And that's, you know, a third of what normally flies on a Thanksgiving holiday. But at the same time, that's significant. And that could be significant spread, you know, of COVID-19. So we'll see what the numbers bear out. But we are in that sort of two to three week time period where people are saying this could start to get out of hand. We do know that hospitals are being overwhelmed. And we should say Northwest Indiana is in that first district in terms of the COVID-19 spread. We're in that red category. If you look at the map for the Indiana State Health Department, I tell you what, that health department website gives you all the numbers, all the data. And it's it can be quite, it's a lot of information, but it also can be a little frightening, especially when you learn that our area, Northwest Indiana, only has 18% of ICU beds available. And that really comes out to about maybe 40 ICU beds in the entire Northwest Indiana area. 40. Yep. And that doesn't mean just in your hospital across the street. They may take you to Michigan City, or they may take you to Valparaiso, wherever there is bed space. And that's after many hospitals had to expand their intensive care units. So hospital staffs haven't had to expand. So just 18% or maybe a little bit more, about 40 ICU beds available in all of Northwest Indiana.
That's right. And, you know, there's a phrase for when a hospital is full, and I can't remember the name of it at this moment, but they essentially, like you said, Mike, if you go to a hospital in Crown Point, maybe you get moved up to Maryville, maybe you get moved up to East Chicago, maybe you're moved out to Valparaiso. And that goes for everything. It's not just COVID. You've slipped and twist your ankle on some ice, like a host of Off Mic has done before. And you got to go to the ER, or if you drop some glass while cooking breakfast and slice your hand open and need stitches, like the guy talking into the microphone right now has done before, you get turned away, or they don't have room for you. You're waiting in an ER longer, and you're waiting for that care longer. Of course, Governor Holcomb making the announcement this week as well that he is issuing a basically a hold on all non-medical emergency surgeries from now until, I think, roughly March. Early. Is it that late? New is into the new year.
Yeah,
but
it's
early January. I can't remember the specific date, but it's eerily similar to what happened here in Indiana way back in March, when Governor Holcomb first put that moratorium on all non-emergency medical procedures. You know, this is one of those things where we look at the situation right now, Mike, and, you know, maybe somebody has a lump that they haven't gotten checked out, or a mole that needed to get taken care of. You know, it could be a tooth issue, so to speak. You know, these other, I don't want to call them minor, but these other medical inconveniences that people have really put on the shelf because of COVID. And, you know, they are, you know, if some of them turn deadly for individuals, they are, while they didn't die from COVID, they died as a result of the pandemic because medical care wasn't available. And, you know, we talk about hospital numbers, Mike, and I know through a lot of your reporting as well, you know, Northwest Indiana, we're really lucky to have a whole bunch of hospitals in Northwest Indiana, because as soon as you go south of Lake, Porter, and LaPorte counties, you get into Newton and Jasper, Stark, Pulaski, and before you get into Tippecanoe and West Lafayette, there's not a whole lot out there. There's not a whole lot across the center of the state. Sure, there's a bunch along Route 30 on your way from here to South Bend to Fort Wayne. But again, if you're further south, before you get to West Lafayette and Kokomo and Muncie and that kind of like central wall, we'll call it, there's not a lot of medical care out there. And a lot of those hospitals have been overburdened for a long time with regards to COVID. And of course, the 2-week surge now post Thanksgiving is really causing a significant situation with hospitals. To get more data as well, NPR did a really good build out. So if you're near a computer, maybe you're listening on the stream right now or on your phone, search NPR and is your hospital overrun or something along the lines of is your hospital? And it should be one of the first couple of links that'll pop up in your search engine. And you can actually click county by county and see how all of the local hospitals are doing in your area. Really a great device, a great tool to visualize it. Because I think, Mike, like you said, we see a lot of numbers and a lot of data, and that's really hard to wrap our heads around 7,300 new cases. Well, what does that look like? And you can actually see that data there.
You know, Tom, too, though, you know, even though we're in this red category, even though hospitals are are feeling the pinch, and again, we're in the flu season, too, because there are people who have to go to the emergency room because of flu. And a lot of hospitals are on bypass right now. They can't take anybody right now. So
bypass, but, yes, that's the phrase I was trying to remember. Thank you.
It's okay. But, you know, putting off in an elective surgery because, that's not good either. There's a reason why the person is getting surgery done because it's something that they need to be taken care of. And it really can't wait. So what might seem minor, who goes to the doctor or to a hospital when they're feeling well? Nobody.
Nobody.
I mean, I'm not going to kid. This is probably not on the same level. About a week ago, I was dealing with a pretty troublesome hangnail on my thumb, and it just wouldn't go away for 2 or 3 days. I'm like, this thing really hurts. I was going to go to urgent care. They said, yeah, you can come in if you want to, you little sissy. But it finally went away. But, you know, hey, we all have an ailment or a situation that we want somebody to take a look at, and to put it off, that's not good either. But I was going to say, I just don't see society, Northwest Indiana, really doing much, really changing their habits much. You go across in Illinois. Now, I have to do that for my work just this week. Just yesterday, I took the train for the first time in months.
What was that like?
It's like out of a Netflix movie. There's nobody around or very few people. The train is pretty much empty. I was talking to commuters who still have to go into Chicago here and there for work. And it's just, it's a really odd time, and a lot of people not wearing their mask or not wearing it properly, pulled out below your nose. That's another thing. A lot of people just don't seem to want to wear that mask. And a lot of times I see a lot of men doing that for whatever reason, but it just doesn't seem like society is really doing much. We're still, the shopping centers are still somewhat full. It's good near Christmas. Tonight, it's Friday and into the weekend. You're going to see a lot of our restaurants just filled to capacity.
And I just drove by. Of course, our studios are right down the road from Southlake Mall. And I don't want to name any stores, but the parking lots in Southlake Mall were full. And this was coming up at about 10:45 this morning into the station. On a Friday, a couple of weeks before Christmas, I know, I get it. People are doing the last minute Christmas shopping. I agree. I find it hard pressed to believe that, we will do enough to, get all of the numbers under control, so to speak. And it goes back to that sort of that dark January. What is January going to look like? And not only that, We live in a red state. Obviously, we have a supermajority in the state Senate and House with a Republican governor. And so I think something for me that I'm going to be paying attention to going into next year, as we are, again, right around the corner from New Year's Eve, hard to believe that as well, is what does Indiana do and how does Indiana look compared to the rest of the Midwest and the rest of the country under a Democratic president? not a Republican one. Of course, we all know Vice President Mike Pence was a former governor here in Indiana, became vice president then under President Trump, running on the ticket with him. Governor Eric Holcomb was, I believe, the chief of staff for Mike Pence right. at the time. Mm-hmm. And so Holcomb and Pence have a very close connection, and I think by default, Holcomb has a very close connection to the White House. And, you know, you look at Governor Holcomb's reactions to and how he kind of handled the pandemic versus other states like Wisconsin with a Democratic governor in a supermajority Republican House and Senate, how Michigan has handled it, how Illinois has handled it, how even Ohio and Kentucky have handled it, and Indiana always seemed to be sort of a step or two above in terms of the numbers as the neighbors. And it'll be really, really interesting to kind of, I think for people looking at it, it goes back to that states' rights versus federal rights. You know, Indiana is a Republican state. It's a big states' rights state. It's a big proponent of individual freedom. So what is that going to look like, sort of an oil and water comparison with regards to a soon-to-be President Biden White House?
Well, it's funny you should say that, states' rights, because we're, you know, as everyone is dealing with the pandemic, President Trump continues to challenge the outcome of the general election. Just recently, the attorney general in Texas challenged the results, wants the Supreme Court to take a look at the four states where President Trump lost. You have Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, I believe Nevada is that fourth one. But also joining that is Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill, mm-hmm. who is a big states' right advocate. So yep. it's perplexing that we are okay with Texas telling Indiana or other states how to run their elections. It seems odd that they now want the federal courts to tell those four states, oh, you're doing it wrong.
And not only that, but I'm going to pull this map up so I have it in front of me so I can look at the states. You know, every state connects except for four of them, Indiana, West Virginia, South Carolina, and Utah. Everything else is literally a connection from Montana to the Dakotas, all the way to Texas, all the way over to Florida. And so you look at that, and they are all red states. They are all states that Donald Trump won in this election cycle. There are several red states that are not in here. That does include Alaska, does include Idaho as well, and Wyoming, states that President Trump won. But the reality is, Curtis Hill's on the way out as Attorney General. Todd Rokita won the election. Curtis Hill, if you'll remember, was accused of multiple counts of sexual harassment, sexual assault as well. Mm-hmm. Forgive me if that's not correct, but essentially he went around grabbing and slapping women during a post-election.
It was at the end of the session.
Yeah, a post-session party, basically. Right. And as a result, Indiana's attorney general, while it is a statewide elected race in the general, for the primaries, it's chosen by committee caucus. Caucus right. Across the state. And so Curtis Hill was not able to garner enough votes to go ahead and be on that ballot. So some of these things that are happening now, a big one as well is Indiana's push to remove parental rights from same-sex couples. And they're essentially trying to go all the way up to the Supreme Court with this argument that that only opposite sex or heterosexual couples should be able to be legal guardians of children. And that's going to be a hotly contested issue here at the Supreme Court, again, controlled by a majority of conservatives, as President Trump was able to add in three conservative judges during his four-year term. And so Curtis Hill is kind of getting the last sort of push that he can possibly get as a Republican attorney general. We don't know what Todd Rokita is going to do as attorney general, but I'd be hard-pressed to believe that he's going to change paths, so to speak.
The only thing with Todd Rokita, and he's going to lock, you know, really the race for Indiana attorney general for the caucus was, it seemed like the litmus test was who can love Donald Trump more. or who can support Donald Trump more, Todd Rokita or Curtis Hill, and I believe there was one other candidate on that list, and Todd Rokita won out. So Todd is going to walk right in step with the Republican line on there. But at the same time, he's not going to have a Republican in the White House.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. But, you know, and this we are sort of digressing a lot here. But one of the things we're probably still going to have to deal with is just the Republican or the conservative disdain for media, for just coverage. And, you know, a lot of times they talk about the mainstream media. That's a big deal over there.
The MSM.
Yeah, yeah, right. But, you know, that also affects local coverage, local TV, newspapers, radio, and how we can get access. So it's going to be interesting to see how Todd Rokita, I got to say, as for governor, as a Republican, Eric Holcomb seems to be, for the most part, available. He stands up there every week. Doing a press conference. Sometimes I get in a question. Sometimes I'm not pick. I'm not sure how that operates. It's always been a sore spot. But either way, he is accessible to the media. And he seems to overall have some respect for the media. I'm not really sure how Todd Rokita is going to play that.
Yeah, I look at Attorney General Curtis Hill right now, and we've never had an issue trying to get Attorney General Hill on the airwaves here. Of course, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch is on Regionally Speaking regularly with Chris Nolte. And Governor Holcomb, while he's not on our airwaves being interviewed by us, you still hear him every week during those weekly press briefings. But Todd Rokita is a bit of a different player, so to speak. He's not a big supporter of public media. He says he likes it. He listens to it, but he doesn't believe that federal or state governments should be in charge of helping to support it, to keep it as a nonprofit and keep it commercial free. We've seen other issues as well during his tenure as a representative, I believe out of District 4.
Right.
Where he was formerly out of the Wabash, West Lafayette area. He wasn't really a big fan of media prior to President Trump, and I can't imagine he's going to be a big fan of media coverage after the fact as well. But again, it's a sort of a wait-and-see approach, but based on his past history, I'm not expecting much to change in his regard. We'll still be there, and I think it's really valuable right now that the White House press corps and the State House, I'll call it press corps, all of you have been on those weekly calls, Mike. We've been there now for the last 4 years. We were there for the previous 8 years, and we'll be there for the next 4 years as well. Regardless of who holds a State House position or who holds a White House position, or who's the local mayor of a community right here in Northwest Indiana, we're here to just serve the people and get the facts out. And there is a difference between mainstream media and local media, and or the air quotes the media, which oftentimes people are referring to the likes of CNN and Fox News and MSNBC. But it'll be, I think, interesting as well, Mike, as we now stare down the barrel of a very strong presence for conservative media. And what does that look like on a full, broad media scope and spectrum?
That's right. That's right. So again, we were talking about a little bit about politics, but also with the COVID-19 vaccine. One of the interesting things that came up in yesterday's committee hearing for the FDA was that that perhaps only people who are 18 years and older should be getting this vaccine, that they're not really sure how it's going to affect kids or people in their teens. And they're also saying teens rarely get it anyway, so maybe we shouldn't give it to them at the younger ages. But also those with severe allergies. Now, there is a couple of people who have taken this. Really, this is happening so fast. It doesn't appear to be because, we live in a society where we want everything done yesterday.
Right,
but
right.
When you're talking about development of vaccines, and that normally it would take years, if not decades, to come up with a vaccine to fight something because of trials and error, this and that. Mm-hmm. I just hope we don't hear a lot of horror stories when it comes to the vaccine. But they say generally it works pretty good.
Yeah, that's the I think a lot of individuals' biggest worries right now with the vaccine is, you know, what kind of long-term ramifications will this have? Will it increase risk of, you know, heart issues? Will it increase a risk of lung issues? Will it increase a risk of something that we don't even know about yet? But that's just something, unfortunately, again, we have to kind of wait and see. And we are in unprecedented territory, Mike. I mean, it does take, you know, years and years of research and tests and placebo That's right. studies to ensure that these vaccines are legitimate. And, you know, I think numbers thrown around right now, you're hearing like, you know, 50%, 45% of the population is willing to get a vaccine. And in reality, we need about 3/4 of the population to get a vaccine in order to have that quote unquote herd immunity. It's gonna be a struggle for sure. I think from the FDA and from President-elect Biden's White House to be able to convince a vast majority to get the vaccine and to get both shots of the vaccine.
That's right. That's right. But again, if you are somebody who maybe has a severe allergy or deals with allergies, and we know there's a lot of people that do, you may, you know, have second thoughts about taking it, or they may give you safeguards. They say if it's given in a hospital setting, I can't imagine, you know, hospitals filling up just to make sure you're okay with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. They may give you an EpiPen in case, you're having trouble with it. Oh man, I just, you know, I'm not trying to scare people. I just hope hospitals, because once you have to use an EpiPen, that gives you like just like about 20 minutes to get to an ER.
Yeah.
So they can make sure you're having some kind of severe allergic reaction. And I just hope it doesn't cause any more problems. But we just got to have faith in our scientists and our doctors that they're doing what's right. Okay, now, in our next segment, before we get into that, I know, Tom, you're big on movies and series. And so in our next segment, we are going to be talking to somebody who knows a lot about the streaming services. So what are some of the things that you enjoy looking at when you're at home, when you're not working, and you're able to relax a little bit?
Those things exist. you know, it's for me right now, probably The Mandalorian. I've not watched any of season 2 yet. I want to binge it when it all comes out. I'm looking forward to the next season of Witcher. And, of course, a lot of breaking news happening yesterday in the world of Marvel and Disney Plus,
right,
with a lot of content coming out there, and almost a buffet, a smorgasbord, if you will, of just like, holy cow, I have so many choices over the next couple of years. You know, but whatever catches my fancy at the moment, and I'm just like everybody else. Sometimes I just need a dumb comedy to turn my brain off. Other times I'm sitting down and plowing through, you know, a couple of seasons of a show that I've watched a dozen times. And other times, you know, I do want to kind of have that cinematic feel of a big movie that maybe I missed at the movie theater a year or two ago, but mm-hmm. it's finally out on a streaming service somewhere. And, you know, the lights are turned off, the popcorn is made, and I'm just trying to convince my kid to be quiet.
There you go. So our next segment deals with all the streaming services that are out there, the ups and downs, the costs. Because if you know, some of them may be $10 or $15, but if you got 4 or 5 of them, it starts to add up. And you start thinking, wait a minute, I thought this was going to be cheap. And it's not. So, Tom Maloney, thank you so much for joining me here on this first segment of Off Mic. It's always great to hear from you. You're always informative and have a lot to say.
Thank you, Mike. And you read that line perfectly. I'm glad you're able to read my notes there.
Great. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. The streaming service Disney Plus just announced yesterday a whole new slate of series dedicated to Marvel and Star Wars. But HBO Max says it will stream the new Wonder Woman movie. So which is the best streaming service? I'm joined now by Emily Gomez, a communications student at Calumet College of St. Joseph's and a student producer for the show. So, Emily, how many streaming services are there now?
There's about 200-plus streaming services. Some are more subpar than others. The main three, though, that people will say, that they'll refer to it as like the, you know, big three, I guess, would be Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime Video.
And do you know what the price range is for some of them?
They can range from about like $16 to actually free. But the ones that are free are not the best. And they also have tons of ads that you're going to have to deal with while watching your program.
Wow. So about 200 streaming services. That's crazy. Yep. So we do know that Disney Plus launched sometime last year. How successful has Disney Plus been?
Disney Plus has actually been very successful. I believe they have about 73 million users at the moment. And the starting price for Disney Plus is $6.99. But you can also get a bundle with Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN, which costs about $12.99. And I think that Disney Plus is a great option for people who are huge fans of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel. And even they're even offering other types of movies on there these days that aren't, that stray from those franchises. And they're having so many new originals. They just announced like 5 new original Star Wars series today, and it's pretty awesome. And tons of Marvel series are on their way as well.
Right. So if I've been watching a lot of Disney Plus to catch The Mandalorian. So if you're into Star Wars, Disney Plus is probably the place you want to be at.
Oh, yeah. And The Mandalorian was one of the highest streaming television shows of 2020. And I think that's where Disney Plus gets most of its, subscriptions are from people who want to catch The Mandalorian, because you literally can't watch it anywhere else. And I believe it was only available in the United States for a while, Disney Plus. So there was even people searching all over the place to pirate. Watch Mandalorian with any means necessary.
And would you consider Netflix as still being the sort of the dominant service in the game?
I definitely think it is. It has the most people subscribed at the moment, and it has the most content out of all of the services, including like TV shows and movies. And they also have the most original content. So people, you know, they'll subscribe to Netflix to watch like Stranger Things, or they'll subscribe to watch like The Queen's Gambit. I believe that's a Netflix original, but
yes,
people, they have a lot of quality to their original series and their movies. And I think that's what draws a lot of people in as well. So to this day, they're still the highest when it comes to numbers of subscriptions.
And to think Netflix started as a company that where you would have to, they would mail you DVDs for you to watch in a couple of days. That's why I never got Netflix because I was like, I want to see the movie now. I don't want to see it in two or 3 days. But that's how they built up their, and they're an exclusively streaming service now, and they're incredibly successful. So we're hearing a lot about the launch very soon of HBO Max. So what is the difference between HBO and HBO Max?
HBO Max is a streaming service that includes all of HBO's television shows and movies that they'll play on the network, but it also includes a lot of new originals that they call Max originals, whereas on HBO they just have their HBO shows, HBO originals, but that differs from the HBO Max originals.
I subscribe to what was called, I believe, HBO Now, just so I could see Game of Thrones. And once it was done, I got rid of it. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would. That one is for like streaming all of the HBO, like the network, without the originals. And you can actually subscribe to it without it being in your cable like package. So a lot of people, I'm sure, for Game of Thrones especially, or Euphoria, or one of those shows that are incredibly popular.
It seems though if you're a DC comic book fan, you may want to get HBO Max at least for a short period, because that's where The new Wonder Woman 84 is going to premiere there and at the movies on the same day. And they're supposed to be releasing the new Justice League revamp movie.
And they're actually planning so many to release on HBO Max, like including Godzilla versus Kong, the new Fast and Furious movie. There's a Tom and Jerry movie that they are going to release soon. And Dune, the Dune remake. And there's so many. They just announced all the movies that they're going to have, ones that are coming soon and potential movies that will be released eventually. So it's actually really cool because I think that's going to draw a lot of people to HBO Max during this time of the coronavirus because they're going to want to see these new movies, especially people who love like DC and in movies in general. They won't be able to miss out if they have HBO Max. And if they already have a subscription, it's not even going to cost them any additional costs, like how Disney Plus released or planning to. They released the Mulan live action movie, but you had to pay about $30 for a few weeks to get it right when it released. You can stream it for free now, but in the like hot period of new release, you had to pay like $30 to watch it.
Right. Now, okay, let's say you have Netflix, HBO Max, you're probably already up to, and Disney Plus, you're now you're probably $20 or plus $20 a month. Now, how is Amazon Prime competing in this whole marketplace?
It's part of that big three, like I mentioned before, of the highest subscriptions. With the most number of subscribers for the service. And it has a lot of movies in its library, but some aren't the best, especially from like personal experience. Like they'll have like a lot of good ones, but you kind of have to go through a lot of crappy ones to find the ones that are good. But I think a lot of people are subscribed to Amazon Prime because they have a Prime membership for Amazon already, and it comes with your Prime membership. So people who are just, signing up for Amazon Prime just for the, faster delivery and free delivery fees, along with it, they're getting Amazon Prime, which is how I got it. And I think it's more of a like, oh, this is a nice extra to have, as opposed to like, oh, I have to subscribe to Netflix or I have to have HBO Max because I have to watch like Friends or whatever. Like they have their originals, but I can't recall any originals that have been as prominent as the originals from like Netflix, Hulu, and HBO Max.
So do you think one day they're going to have it where you can just, so if you were to subscribe to say Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Netflix, HBO Max, you're probably shelling out quite a bit of money. Do you think one day they'll have a package where you could just kind of bundle some of them up together?
At the moment, they do have some bundles, like I said, with like Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN. But I really don't think they would bundle, like, say, Hulu and Netflix and those big ones because those are huge competitors. Like, the market's really saturated at the moment, but I think that with all the choices now that they're going to have to fight to get people's attention. So I don't think – because actually Netflix, I believe last year, just actually raised the price of their subscription, and they haven't lost any customers because – you know, they're like the leading, they're like a household name at this point. Like Netflix is synonymous with just the idea of a streaming service in general. The most popular one. So I don't think they're going to do anything, especially with Netflix. I don't think they're going to bundle with any other services because they already have their loyal like clientele.
Emily Gomez is one of my students at Calumet College of St. Joseph's and a streaming service expert. Emily, thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic today.
No problem.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, you know, it's still the NFL season. The Chicago Bears are playing again this Sunday. About a month ago, the Bears seemed to be on top of the world at 5-1, but they lost a few games, and they're now, I believe, 5-7. I think that's they are now. But the White Sox are making a lot of moves in the offseason, and it's keeping a lot of fans just excited. And joining me here to get us catch up on all of this is WBEZ's veteran sports contributor, Cheryl Raystout. Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
Fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears. We do know they play on Sunday.
Yeah.
Does it appear that Mitch Trubisky is going to start again?
Yes, he will. He will be the starter. Of course, the big story about Sunday is who's playing for Houston, and Deshaun Watson, who the Bears passed up on to take Mitchell Trubisky. So there's a lot of storylines going on about who the Bears are facing and not being their quarterback.
Right. And, Deshaun Watson is one of those players that they could have signed along with Mahomes.
Patrick Holmes.
Just big quarterbacks that seem to they're just having a great career. And Mitch Trubisky, we're not even sure if he's going to be on the Bears next year.
Probably he won't be. He's a free agent at the end of the year. The Bears did not pick up his fifth-year option, so no, I don't think Mitchell Trubisky will be back next year, but we don't even know if the general manager and the head coach will be back next year because they're in the middle of a six-game losing streak. They were 5-1, and now you look at them, and there's a lot of disarray. When the defense has been bad the last 2 weeks, that's a real harbinger of what's to come. That means things are not going well at Hallis Hall, and so it doesn't look good.
You know, the thing with Mitch Trubisky, too, and a lot of people harp on him, but, you know, he seemed to have the perfect outlook or work ethic to, you wanted to see him be successful. He wasn't, you know, Jay Cutler kind of rubbed people the wrong way with a kind of a surly attitude, but a lot of talent, although, you know, didn't always translate on the field. Mitch Trubisky was the opposite of that. He just seemed like a total team player and was willing to do anything to be successful, and it's just unfortunate. He seems very much like just a few years ago, Marcus Mariota was pretty much doing great and just fell out of favor. And just it's just amazing how a quarterback can just fall out of favor pretty quick.
You know, you can't blame Mitchell Trubisky for where he was drafted at number two. That's not his fault. The thing was he had shortcomings because he did not have a lot of experience in the college in his background. But you're right. If you ever got to sit and chat with a Mitchell Trubisky, you will walk away going, boy, he's a really likable, genuine guy. Unfortunately, he doesn't have the skills to be an NFL quarterback under this system. You know, what could happen with him, like what happened with Leonard Floyd, who is with the Rams and is having, you know, a great season, he could leave and go somewhere else and somebody is able to, release the possibility of him being a good quarterback. But right now, he's not a good quarterback, and the situation is pretty dire at this point as far as the quarterback situation for the Bears in the future.
You know, Cheryl, though, how much of this, though, is going to land? I mean, it's really tough on the how can he move forward as general manager for the Bears is Ryan Pace. Ryan Pace, he's the one that drafted him in a very strong quarterback class. How can he overcome this?
He probably won't. Although we don't know what the McCaskies are thinking, but he put all the ball wax with this particular player. The quarterback selection, when you have the number two pick in the draft, and actually they were three, they moved up. But when you have a high draft pick and you know, the scouting reports on all the players actually had, you know, Watson higher as far as skills, but except for one, Mel Kiper had, you know, Trubisky at number one, but nobody knew Pat Mahomes would be what he is. He was an anomaly as far as that goes. But the thing with Watson was a two-time Heisman Trophy winner. You know, he had all the skills, but Ryan Pace decided to go in the direction that, you know, he thought was best. And the problem is, when you invest that much, Michael, you moved up in the draft, you gave up draft pick for him, and you don't hit on a you know, franchise quarterback, it's on you. It's also on Ryan Pace for some of the other selections he made when he did, you know, have Mike Glennon on the roster, and when he did sign Nick Foles. And Nick, with Nick Foles, he also gave up a draft pick and is on the hook for $21 million for him. So all of that lands on Ryan Pace's desk, and it's up to him to either change it or up to the Bears ownership and management to make a change.
Okay, Cheryl. Let's get back to something a little bit more uplifting.
Something good, right?
You know, the White Sox. I mean, the White Sox, you know, they have a new manager, Tony La Russa, and they just signed Adam Eaton and a new pitcher from the Texas Rangers. Seems a lot like the White Sox are really trying to make some moves to at least go further into the playoffs.
Absolutely. We've talked to Rick Hahn twice this week. Once when after he traded for Lance Lynn, who is a quality starter, can give you 200 innings. He goes deep. He's just one of those pitchers that you like to have on your roster, because now you have in the starting rotation you got Lucas Giolito, Dallas Keuchel, and you have Lance Lynn. And what happens with that is with the younger players like Dylan Cease and Ronaldo Lopez, you can continue to develop them. And the fact is that they hired a new pitching coach, Ethan Katz, who was the high school pitching coach of Lucas Giolito, who has recently been with the San Francisco Giants, and he's the one that got Lucas back on track. So that's a real positive. And the thing with Adam Eaton, I know Adam, and a lot of people are, oh, he's a bad clubhouse guy. No, he's not a bad clubhouse guy. He's this guy that always thinks that people don't like him or people have something against him and that he's always got to prove himself. And so the thing is that he takes it on the field, and he does play hard, and he plays with an edge. And when he went to Washington, that's when he started to mature more, and he became more of a leader in a positive way. And in fact, I know the management from the Washington Nationals really well. The general manager is somebody that I've known since he was with the White Sox, and also Davey Martinez, their manager. I've known him for years as a player and as coach. And they loved Adam Eaton. And I was in the Washington Nationals locker room, and they all liked Adam. So there was a lot of narrative going on about how a negative guy he is. It's not that way. But when you have a piece that you could put, as far as Adam, put him in right field, probably platoon him a little bit with Adam Engel, and you've solidified your pitching rotation. They may even go after another starter, but they do have to settle down on their designated hitter. They are going for it this year.
You know, and the Chicago Cubs, they made some of their own moves. They got rid of Schwarber,
Albert Almora.
Albert Almora. Does it look like just a few years ago, the Cubs were considered like still this top team in baseball. They won the World Series, and it just seems like the wheels have kind of fallen off a little bit on the Cubs.
Yeah, right now, I think the word, they're not going to say they're rebuilding. They will never say that at this point, but they may be retooling is probably what they're going to use. Their problems were they never drafted pitchers high in the draft. And who they did take, they didn't develop them, because it's rare to find a Cubs draft pick that's actually contributed at this point. So that's a problem that rests on what they did as far as their planning and their drafting and their development was on the pitching. They invested a lot in their hitting, their position players. But the problem is a lot of position players that they did draft and they do have up in the major league, their offense has not been productive. They strike out a lot. They have low batting averages. And so you have a concern there that things aren't right. You still have the Anthony Rizzos, you still have the Javi Baez, you still have the Chris Bryant, but there could be free agents next year. So a lot of it is costs, you know, what's going on with them. They are cutting costs on this team. Michael, they laid off over 100 people on their staff. And so with that said, we don't know what type of financial restraints that Jed Hoyer, who took over for Theo Epstein, is going to have going into this season and going especially after next year when he has all those free agents.
Okay, Cheryl, this goes to my next question. How are these sports leagues dealing ongoing? I mean, they're putting a product onto the field or the basketball court or whatever, but this pandemic has affected all aspects of life. And you talk about some of the things that people really aren't paying attention to, with the Cubs laying off 100 people from their staff, not players, of course, but just internally as an organization. You know, how are these sports leagues going to be able to continue to play without fans?
That's the million-dollar question right now, and that's why they're hoping, they're really hoping the vaccine will help, you know, get fans. And even then, with the vaccine, people still don't know. We don't know if they're going to go flocking back to games. And that's a real concern, Michael. It's a real concern for all the leagues right now. The NBA, as you know, the Bulls are starting tonight with a preseason game. I'm going there tonight. There's not going to be fans. Chicago does not allow fans, and so it's going to be interesting to see how they fare. Some of the teams will have some fans. The NFL, you know, they've had their issues, so there's going to be a money crunch that's going to be happening. And you know, with the leagues that have the salary cap, they're flat, or they may even, you know, be reduced somewhat. The NHL is maybe going to start January 13th. They're all holding back because they're concerned about not having these fans. And that is the bottom line for all the teams. It's really going to be interesting to see if any teams go under. The Philadelphia Phillies, apparently they lost a ton of money. And so here you have, they have big-time free agents that they signed, like Bryce Harper and people like that. So you've got these teams that are in this quandary, and now they got to try to help figure out, will it work in the future? We don't know. Everything is going to be how COVID goes is how sports will go. And we're seeing in college ranks, too, cancellations upon cancellations of games. And the health of these players are put at risk, too.
Well, that's Cheryl Ray Stout, the veteran sports reporter with WBEZ. Cheryl, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
And that is all the time we have for today's show. We'd like to thank all our guests. I'd like to thank Tom Maloney for being one of our guests. Emily Gomez helping us with the streaming. And, of course, Emily Gomez, Cheryl Ray Stout talking about the sports. For me, Michael Puente, I hope you have a very safe and enjoyable weekend. You can catch this show again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. And thank you once again. Have a great weekend. Michael Puente, I'll see you.